Thank you for listening to this talk given at the Center for Spiritual Living, Midtown, Atlanta.
CDs in. Well, today I'm excited for you. You've come to a place for church. You've gotten out of bed. And where can you go to a church on Sunday and you're going to hear quotes from Shakespeare? You're going to hear quotes from Robert Brown, and you're going to hear quotes from Emma Curtis Hopkins. You're going to hear quotes from David Barrett. Couldn't get better any than that, right? So I'm really excited about my talk. I love my talk today because it made me grow in working on this talk for the last week and a half. And mainly the talk title is Awaken from Winter's Discontent. And I'm going to be talking about two different things in there. I'm going to be talking about the discontent, but I'm also going to be talking about awakening. The discontent is going to go through a few levels, and you'll see how we work through our discontent. But the awakening is also going to go through a few levels. We're going to talk about awakening and awe and what it takes to awaken. So I'm going to go through all of that. But how many of you are discontent with winter right now? Okay? So four winter storm warnings in the last 2 weeks that we've had right here. We're tired of it all. Even this morning up in Clayton, freezing rain warnings up in Clayton. So it's just kind of like, okay, it's still hanging on for us around here. And I see our winter's discontent in a lot of people's lives. I was at work on Friday and I had somebody coming in saying, please school be open so the kids can go to school. Please be open. So I know that they're discontent. I saw the long lines at the Hawks game. Did you see that? Where they still played the game. Winter storm warning. Governor has declared a state of emergency. We're still going to have a Hawks game down there. So the Hawks were there. There were hardly any ticket takers there. The concession stands, two were open out of the whole place for them, so they had long lines. There was a lot of discontent over there for that. And we had a little bit of a break yesterday. I don't think it got right to 50, but sure felt like the 70s or 80s, right, when we finally got there. But the very fact that we have discontent is troubling for me. We just finished a class with Emma Curtis Hopkins, and she was very clear in our lives that out there in the world of effect, if we have something happening out there, that it has nothing to do with anything out there that's happening in the world, and everything to do in here, inside consciousness. Mainly, Emma is saying, if we had discontent in our world of effect, we have discontent in here. If we had discontent out there, we had discontent in here. If we're discontented with winter, has nothing to do with winter, has everything to do with us. Emma uses the language back in the 1800s, and it was saying things like this. If we look out into a crowd and see a lot of homely people, it has nothing to do with their looks and everything to do about our homeliness in here. If we look out into a crowd and see a plain crowd, it has nothing to do with the plain crowd and everything to do with our consciousness of plainness in here. It's yourself you are seeing. It's what we're doing. What she said is that we need to do away with this kind of thinking in here, and it's called setting aside the doctrine of limitations. Whenever we see something out there and we name it homely or we name it plain or we name it discontented, we're setting up a doctrine of limitation. And Emma says we need to set aside the doctrine of limitations. We need to stop doing that judging. We need to stop doing all of those things because, again, it has nothing to do with all those people out there. It has something to do in here. So Emma's telling us all, if we are discontent with winter, it has nothing to do with winter out there. It has everything to do with discontentment in here. Now, this is the scary part. We think the discontentment is with everything out there. We look out there. There's discontentment at work. We think it's the boss. We think it's the coworkers. We think it's the line of work. So we place our discontentment out there. There's discontentment in our bodies. We're either too small, we're too big, our bodies don't respond the way they used to. We're discontent with that. There's discontentment in our financial affairs. I don't have enough money. I don't have enough savings. I'm 45 years old. I'm not 45 years old, but somebody could be saying this. I'm 45 years old, and I don't have a 401k nor any other kind of retirement account. I don't know what I'm going to be doing. And actually, some people say, forget the retirement account. I can't even make it paycheck to paycheck. So I've got discontentment going on in here. Finally, a hard one, but a lot of people are discontent with the love in their life. very discontent with that. And so they're not happy anymore in their relationship. And so the powers out there, it has to do with them and all those people and everything like that. So we want to put the entire reason for our discontentment out there on all those people, our boss and everything like that. And this is the easy life when we can blame it. It's all the fault of out there, my boss, my body, my finances, my lover. But Emma comes along and slaps you in the face and says, if you're seeing discontentment in your life, it's because the discontentment is in here. It's not the boss. It's not the job. So this sounds like bad news, that whether I am content or discontent is in here rather than out there, but it's actually great news. It's great news that I'm discontent in here. If our contentment or discontentment were all based on things out there, we're running around every area of our life and trying to fix things out here and set things up. I call this putting out fires. Before I came into this teaching, I like what you were saying 20 years ago before I came into this teaching, because I go like before this teaching and after this teaching. But before this teaching, I was very proud of myself on being able to go put out a fire and put out another fire and put out another fire and put out another fire. I didn't realize that I was creating those fires and having to go put them all back out, but I was very good at putting out the fires and putting out the fires. So everything was out there. My better job was out there. My better body was out there. My retirement fund is somewhere out there, and I better start searching for ways to find it. My better love life is out there. I need to search for it. But that is not where it is. It's all right in here. When life seems content out there, guess what? It means we're content in here. When life seems discontented out there, it's because we're discontented in here. And the in here is where we have complete control. That's what I like. It's not about going out and putting out fires and I have to have this person do this in order to take care of this problem and that. But when you finally realize where the discontentment is on this side of the equation within me, I have complete control over this side of the equation. I have complete control over here. So this is the great news. But you know what? I even have greater news. The discontentment is not your discontentment. The discontentment is not your discontentment. It's divine discontentment. There is a divinity within you that is ready to express the fullness of life through you. Life is pushing itself through you right this very minute. It's pushing abundance. It's pushing love. Love's been trying to come through in the relationship all these 20s of years. It's been pushing through us all the time, and when it doesn't have an outlet, there's a rub, and there's discontent. So it's the divinity within us that is discontent, not necessarily me that's discontent, that then shows up as discontent out here in my world. Robert Browning calls this the imprisoned splendor. He's got a poem where he says this. I want to read this. It's not real long, but I just want to read it because it absolutely sums up what this whole teaching is about all the time, and what I try to harp on almost every time that I'm up here is recognizing the imprisoned splendor. We have the imprisoned splendor within us. When we don't allow that imprisoned splendor out, there's a discontent going on within our bodies, which automatically leads to the world of effect with discontentment out there. And so this poem goes like this. Truth is within ourselves. It takes no rise from outward things, whatever you may believe. There is an inmost center in us all, where truth abides in fullness. And around wall upon wall, the gross flesh hems it in. This perfect, clear perception, which is truth. A baffling and perverting carnal mesh binds it and makes all error. And to know rather consists in opening out a way whence the imprisoned splendor may escape than in effecting an entry for a light supposed to be without. To know rather consists in opening out a way whence this imprisoned splendor may escape than infecting an entry for a light supposed to be without. We're all out looking for a sign or looking for light or looking for something like that. And what we need to be understanding is that that imprisoned splendor is already here, and we need to be allowing it to come out. So that's the discontentment, when the imprisoned splendor doesn't have a way to come out. The truth doesn't have a way to come out. It's been hemmed into our carnal mesh and is looking for a way out. Hence we feel the rub. Hence we have the discontentment. And all along we thought it was out there, the cause for our discontentment, when the entire time it's right here. It's right here. And more importantly, it's not my discontent. It is divinity looking for a way out. And why don't we let it out? There's lots of reasons why. There's fear to let it out. There's doubt that I can do those things. There's laziness. I don't want to change my life. I don't want to do anything differently. So there's lots of reasons why this is trying to come out, and we just hold it back in, and we don't allow it to come out. Some folks don't even know they have this truth meshed in with their skin. They don't know it, the fullness of life within them. They think the fullness of life is out there. My neighbors have it. My best friends have it. I don't have it. But we all have it. It's all meshed in. So they search out there for truth, and they search out there for the fullness of life, when all along it was lying in here in smiling repose, as Emerson says. It's right here. Ernest Holmes, the founder of religious science, the founder of this teaching we teach here, said this in his last conference. He was at Asilomar in 1959. He gave a sermon by the sea. And what he talked about with Science of Mind talks exactly about this imprisoned splendor. But more importantly, what religious science or science of mind has to do with that? And he said, science of mind is the most direct impartation of divine wisdom that has ever come to the world, because it incorporates the precepts of Jesus and Emerson and Buddha and all the rest of the wise. We have rediscovered that which the great, the good, and the wise have sung about and thought about, the imprisoned splendor within ourselves and within each other, and have a direct contact with it. So I like those three things right there that Holmes talks about. The imprisoned splendor within ourselves, recognizing the imprisoned splendor within each other, and that we have a direct contact with that imprisoned splendor. So it's the imprisoned splendor causing our discontent. We're content when we allow it to flow. So this is where we get a portion of my talk title from, Awaken from a Winter's Discontent. Of course, this comes from Shakespeare and his play Richard III. And yes, even Steinbeck wrote a novel on this entitled The Winter of Our Discontent. Well, in that play, Richard the Future King announces this, and it's Shakespeare's language. So if you remember from college how bad that was, go through this with me just for a minute, because I'll do an interpretation of it in the end. That play opens with Richard the Future King saying, "Now is the winter of our discontent, made glorious summer by this son of York, and all the clouds that lowered upon our house in the deep bosom of the ocean buried." What this means is Richard, the future king, opens his play not by protesting his discontent, but by celebrating an upturn in his family's fortune. His brother Edward IV, they're the sons of Duke of York, has wrestled the English crown from Henry VI and the Lancastrian house. So those who simply quote, "Now is the winter of our discontent," are doing this line a disservice. Since the "now" actually modifies "made glorious," in other words, it really should say, "The winter is now made glorious summer." To translate it even more loosely, this is what the king is saying. The oppression of our family, which made life like a long winter, has been turned to a summery contentedness now that my brother is king. The oppression of our family, which made life like a long winter, has been turned to a summery contentedness now that my brother's king. So for any of us with an actual long winter or a seemingly long winter with what's going on in our lives, can turn it to a summary contentedness. "Now is the winter of discontent" should now mean for each one of us, whenever we hear this line again, The time of unhappiness is past. The time of unhappiness is past. So whenever you hear now is the winter of our discontent, you say the time of unhappiness is past. And why is this? Well, that's the second part of my talk. We're talking about content, discontent. I want to talk about the awaken part, the awaken. To wake up, to stop sleeping, arouse, arise. The mystics through the ages have said we're sleeping and to wake up. We're walking around life in a sleepwalk. We run on our subconscious brain patterns, and I hate to think this, but we set up our subconscious brain patterns in our teens, and to think that we're still running around on those patterns that we set up in our teens, that's pretty scary. However, we're running on those subconscious brain patterns that we set up at that time. So it's kind of like driving. I know I'm the only one that had this feeling where I'm driving along and driving along, and two blocks later do I shake my head and go, where have I been for the last two blocks? Where have I been? Well, you got there with your subconscious mind. Your subconscious mind was just going on autopilot and know those two blocks, and your conscious mind didn't have to think about it too much. It's just like when we tie our shoes, a lot of things we do in our subconscious. Paul likes talking about taking a shower. Whenever you take a shower, you do that with your subconscious mind. You do it exactly the same way that you've done it for all these years. And so when you're in Paul's class, and I picked it up from him, so I'm saying, how do you break out of your subconscious mind pattern that you set up? Shower backwards. Shower backwards. Break out of that subconscious mind because we're running on autopilot. Some people go two blocks running off their subconscious minds, and you know what? Some people go three quarters of their lives running off their subconscious mind. This is going through life sleeping. That is why the mystics say, wake up. Wake up not only and be conscious, but be conscious of your greater self as well. Be conscious of that greater splendor that's been hemmed into our carnal mesh. So where does this awakening occur? And it occurs with many different things. It occurs with awe moments. It occurs many different things. So last spring, I remember coming out of a restaurant at an evening in Toco Hills at sunset. And walking out the door, there was a spectacular rainbow. It is probably the most spectacular rainbow I've ever seen in my life. So I was at Chris's Pizza, if you know where Chris's Pizza is in North Druid Hills, and I walked out. The rainbow was not just one of the partial ones that you can kind of see in the sky. Literally, you could see it go from horizon to horizon in a deep, deep, deep color. It was absolutely spectacular. But more spectacular than that was people in the parking lot were like pulling over, not in parking spots, and getting out and getting their phones and taking pictures and everything like that. It was just really amazing. It was a really awe moment, an awakening moment of something bigger than us was happening right there, and people were doing that. I was with a friend of mine, and he's gone through all the Buddhist studies. He's converted to Buddhism, and he said, they're just waking up. They're just waking up. There is a beauty like this all the time around us, but we are in our subconscious mode and we don't see it. We're sleeping. But something awakens us like this and we stop and take pictures and we go back to sleep. Toco Hills has been asleep ever since. You go through there and look, everybody's in their auto subconscious pilot. They're screaming at each other over parking spots. They're running into each other with their grocery carts. They're all sleepwalking. And we're in there with them. But there's something more of life, and that something more is the imprisoned splendor. Did you know right now, this very minute, that you're better looking than you think you are? Somebody said yes. Who was that? Raise their hand. I love that. Sylvia does. Do you know right now that you're richer than you think you are? Do you know that you are more loving than you think you are? Did you know that you're more sexier than you think you are, Sylvia? So how is this? The fullness of life within you, hemmed in, is there waiting to come out. It's there. It does not come out in the subconscious mode. It has to come out in your conscious mode. You consciously have to contact with this imprisoned splendor and say, I see you and I feel you and I allow you to come out into my life. You must consciously touch that imprisoned splendor. Ernest Holmes in that statement finishes and says this, you and I are witness to the divine fact, and we have discovered an authority beyond our minds, even though our minds utilize it. You and I are witness to the divine fact, now we consciously know this, and we have discovered an authority beyond our minds, the imprisoned splendor, even though our minds utilize it. The universal mind, the individual mind, one and the same. You need to understand that. It's just like yin and yang. And if one of my students from class would be here, he was like, that's separateness. You've got two things. I was like, no, it's two aspects of the one mind. Two aspects of the one mind, the divine mind, the individual mind, yin and yang, just tied together as the one mind that's right there. However, with our individual mind, can we go into our subconscious pattern and just let the divine mind fall away and not have any single aspect to do with our lives? So we consciously have to connect those two back together. Consciously, we have to use our full mind, because I love my David Barrett mind. But I also know that I can touch that divinity within me at any time that I just calm everything down out there and come in here and start looking for that truth that's been hemmed in to this thing called David Barrett. So our minds utilize this from the conscious state. We did learn this in our Living Well class. I can look out and I can see several people that were in our Living Well class, that when you finally take enough spiritual class and everything like that, do you finally transform your subconscious mind into this contacting the divine all the time? So your autopilot is in that mode all the time. But that's a really upper level of spiritual consciousness. We have to unlearn all we learned about taking care of ourselves by manipulating things out there to get money, to get love, to get better. But you know what? Now the time of unhappiness is past. Now is the winter of our discontent. And with that word awaken and the awe that we need, that's what happened with the rainbow. There was awe there, but that's when everybody became awakened, said my Buddhist friend. When the people saw the rainbow, including myself, we were awed. We stopped for a minute because something bigger was happening in life that we normally don't see. Something big was happening and we sensed it. We were a part of it. We were awed. There was a great article in the Wall Street Journal this week on awe, and it says, feeling awesome. Feeling awesome. And I like bringing this up because it's scientists that bring up this aspect of religion, and I like when science and religion go hand in hand. And the article there said those scientists have studied awe and said that it benefits us in all sorts of ways, from stronger health and to improved relationships. They found that awe experiences increase our pro-social behaviors, making us more generous and more humble. When you touch into that bigger aspect of yourself, something happens. Awe experiences increase our empathetic accuracy, so we recognize another person's emotional expression and respond in concern. So we respond in concern and have empathy because we're not in our automatic pilot. We're not in our subconscious mind where we just drove two blocks and we didn't see a single person or a single thing. We didn't notice our friend was in pain or had concerns, and we were just on the autopilot. So when we have this awe experience, it wakes us up and we can be more in tune with our friend that we'd just been missed for those last two blocks. So awe is an emotional response to something vast, and it challenges and expands our way of seeing the world. It might be triggered by an encounter with nature, a religious experience, a concert. Believe it or not, a political rally can make you have an awe experience. A sports event can make you have an awe experience. Who here has been to a sports event and had an awe experience? I have. I loved one of the last college football games, not the very last one, but one of the catches in the end zone was absolutely spectacular. It was like, okay, that's beyond just human capability to do that. So even in a sports event, there's an awe moment. We're not likely to find it in our subconscious mind running mode. We have to be awake for it. I have been awed by watching a child being born while I was in the Army. For those of you that don't know, when I was stationed in Korea, I was on the pediatric ward, working night shift at the pediatric ward. And it truly is true that on full moon do babies come on full moon, and a lot of birthing happens. So I'm called all the way down to the nursery, and we were birthing babies on full moon nights. They had the women lined up on gurneys all the way down there, and I was just one of the caretakers down on the pediatric ward, and they're like, all hands on deck, we're coming in delivering babies. So when you get down there, you're awed by watching a child being born. I've been awed by watching the lava flow out in Hawaii into the ocean. And the most time that I was ever awed that it brought tears to my eyes was traveling at Lake Tahoe, and I wanted to do the whole drive around the lake just so I could see the entire rim of Lake Tahoe and see everything. And it was just pulling into a regular stop parking lot, and the water was so spectacularly clear that the boulders were going into the water, and the mountains still in June with snow covered on top of them and everything. The beauty was spectacular, and just I had tears coming down my face just because of the spectacularness of the beauty. I was awed. I know all of you have had an awe experience. Someone said they spent 9 days of awe kayaking in Alaska. But what really got me in this article about awesome, living an awesome experience and feeling awesome, and I kind of disagree with them, but they're the scientists and the researchers. The researchers actually said that people have an awe experience 3 times a week. Well, I don't have an awe experience 3 times a week. Maybe I'm missing out. But I was talking about it at work last week when I started reading about it. I was like, do you have an awe experience 3 times a week? And maybe I'm just not doing it right. The Dr. Keltner at the Berkeley Social Interaction Lab said this. He said he took 56 inner-city kids rafting, and a week after the trip, they experienced academic benefits. Just by getting the inner-city kids outside and doing that, they were more engaged, they were more curious at what was going on to the world around them. Dr. Keltner said experiences helps to fight depression as well, and that it actually reduced inflammation. He did a study with 119 undergraduates, and they were to rate feeling 7 positive emotions, including awe. Those who reported awe the most had the lowest levels of inflammation markers in their saliva. So by being in contact with this, we're changing our body. We're changing that world of effect. The researchers, the scientists, said the reason awe is so powerful is because it takes us out of our own heads. I like that. Scientists don't want to say we take ourselves out of the head. They want an explanation for everything inside the head. So here the scientists are saying the reason for awe is so powerful is because it takes us out of our own heads. They said awe minimizes our individual identity and attunes us to the things bigger than we are. Holmes also says this. He says there's a power for good in the universe greater than we are, and we can use it. We're the ones that have to step into it. More awe studies showed that after people watched nature videos with awe-inspiring scenes, they gave 25% more in their giving. So when we have the collection, we're going to put the screen down, and I'm going to put the frozen Niagara Falls up there so you can see them, and we'll see if the 25% really works. But they said something happens in our mind when we're in that connected with awe versus, do you see where you kind of save more when you kind of fall off by yourself and you don't have that divinity within you? It's me and mine and I don't have enough and things like that. But the minute that you start connecting up, it's not so much me and mine and I don't have enough. It's ours and us and there's plenty. So 25% more is given. Also, one of the scientists said that they did 2 sets of videos. One was just a regular scene of a street scene in New York where people were on the hustle and bustle, and one was on a nature scene and things like that. And so the person was meeting the students as they come out the door and deliberately dropped pins to see if anybody would act any differently. And definitely the group that watched the nature and everything like that, 10% more of the people stopped and helped them and picked up pens. The people that saw the hustle and bustle didn't stop at all and pick up the pens. So there was just this change in the way that they worked by that. So science is saying the same thing that the mystics have been saying. Be open to be awed. We need to be awake for this. We need to awaken ourselves. Wake up. Awakening is more than just being awed in or thinking. In that study one last time, a teacher and a student were walking through a college campus discussing the problems of the world. And the student sighed and said, "We must be patient. We must be patient." And the teacher said, "Nonsense. Nonsense." He continued, "We will never change the world situation if we become stagnant by accepting it passively." That's the sleepwalking. In other words, we must act on our divine moments of truth that come through us rather than just be awed. So now I'm telling you, it's not enough just to be awed and to connect with that. Now I'm telling you, you need to act on it. You need to do something about that. The Dalai Lama has said, we need to do more than offer prayers for world peace. That's great. You're connecting in something like that, but something has to happen. He said, new ideas and visions will become useless in the new millennium if they do not lead to change. So it's not just having the moment, it's actually doing something about it. In other words, even when we wake up for just a second, we can't just awaken and say, wow, that was a big idea. That came from a really big, deep part of me. Oh, okay. We'll go back to sleep. It requires something more. And what is that something more? Move your feet. In this teaching, we say treat and move your feet. Offer up an affirmative prayer, touch that divine truth within you, and then do something about it. Move in the direction of your treatment. If you're sitting here and saying, okay, my favorite saying, nobody loves me, everybody hates me, I guess I'll go eat worms. That's over here. David's saying, touch that imprisoned splendor. There is a divine love within me, and I'm completely full of love right now. Why don't I touch that right now? So let me go ahead and touch that aspect. Let me do a treatment for understanding that there's a divine love, there's an individual love, the two of us are one and the same. I announce the love in my life, I give great thanks for it, and I release this law to universal law, knowing it is so, and so it is. But then I don't do anything about it. I don't do anything about being more loving. So if you want more love in your life, be more loving. If you want more prosperity in your life, act more rich. If you want a healthier life, start doing things that are healthier for you. So, offer up an affirmative prayer, touch the divine truth within us, and then we need to do something about it. So if we have discontentment in our world, discontentment with our winter, discontent with our lives, it has nothing to do with the lives and everything that we're doing in our mind. And I must remain vigilant. And this is where the David Barrett quote comes in, because it's very powerful, and I want you to understand this. Adverse conditions do not move me. Adverse conditions do not move me. When I'm looking out here and I see adverse conditions, they do not move me. I move adverse conditions. You're coming back over here, coming back with the truth that's within you, and to understand that you can change that adverse condition. If you have a discontentment in your life, the winter of my discontent, the life of my discontent, I can change that. I don't have to live with that anymore. So adverse conditions do not move me. I move adverse conditions. Discontented situations do not move me. I move discontented situations to contented situations rather than sit passively by. Now is the time of our winter's discontent. It only means the time of our unhappiness is past, because you are greater than you think you are, and you are greater than your discontented life. There's something within you that will pull you through. That truth is meshed in with your carnal skin, and it is wonderful, and so are you, and so it is. So we take these words into mind. Yes, we do awaken from a winter's discontent, which just only means that our happiness has now ended. Our unhappiness has now ended. We move into a greater understanding of ourselves. We awaken ourselves to the divinity that's within every single one of us. There's a divinity that surrounds us. There's a divinity that's at the farthest reaches of the universe, and it's right here in the chair where you're sitting, right on the stage where I'm standing. That divinity is ever-present right here and right now, and each one of us is an aspect of that divinity. We claim for ourselves that we understand that we have this imprisoned splendor within us, and it's just awaiting for us to be the outlet to come into our lives. So we allow more health to show up, the vitality of life to show up into every single aspect of our being, to every single cell, to every single system. We allow that to come through. We allow the creativeness of our careers to come through us. The universe is just truly creative, and it's trying to create through each one of us in our careers. It's pushing new ideas about how a new way to do this career works. Everything, that's the imprisoned splendor that only knows how to come through you, individualized, connecting with that imprisoned splendor, allowing it to come out. The abundance of the universe is everywhere present, and we're the ones that need to start announcing that we're an aspect of that abundance. And the love of the universe is truly each one of us expressing that divine love coming out humanly as each one of these. First and foremost, we love ourselves more than we've ever loved ourselves before. If I only love the aspect of me that's only human, maybe, maybe not, there's not enough to love. But if I understand my connectedness with this imprisoned splendor and the amount of love that I have with that connection, I am very worthy of love. I am the epitome of universal love expressing through me. We let go of the smaller ideas of ourselves. If we're truly discontented in any area of our life right now, we understand that the discontentment has nothing to do with the situation or the people involved. It has everything to do with me and my side of the equation. More importantly, it doesn't have anything to do with me. It has to do with the divine imprisoned splendor trying to come out, and for some reason or another, each one of us is blocking it. That blockage stops now. We allow that flow to go through into all these areas of our lives. We give great thanks for this understanding of the human and the divine connected as one, the imprisoned splendor within each single one of us, now unleashed, leads to a very contented life. We are content in all areas for every single one of us. This is the truth for each one of us, and so it is.